Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not an AI-generated voice, although it may soon be one. It is just me talking like a machine for a moment. AI-generated voices and ads might become more common, thanks to an agreement between the Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA, and an AI cloning upstart. Whenever, just a piece of advice, whenever your union is called SAG, you can reduce your hopes. You know, the man from SAG is here. Okay, after I talk to the man from We Quit. The American Media Workers Union, SAG-AFTRA, announced it has struck a deal with Narrative. That's no E at the end of narrative. That's how you tell it apart from a real word. It describes itself as a marketplace for advertisers to buy talent likeness.
I'm my own talent likeness. Thank you.
The agreement sets the rules for licensing performers' voices for AI-generated media. The union has given the green light for members to take advantage of such licensing, noting they now have a safe option to license their voice talents. Quote, Narrative has agreed to our terms, and its platform is an excellent example of how AI can be ethically used, not ethnically, ethically, by putting compensation, informed consent, and control in the hands of individual performers, said an exec at the union. To get access to the union's pool, ooh, it's cool in here. Narrative had to give some concessions. Brands that propose ads to performers need to state what their AI clones will say and promote, and offer a chance to turn the brand down. SAG-AFTRA members, if they approve the ad, get to set the price and negotiate if they think they deserve more. Good luck with that. Been tried in other areas. Doesn't work so well. SAG-AFTRA's benefit plans will also get a cut of every ad run through Narrative. The union won't say how much. Plenty of celebrities have already had AI-cloned versions of their voices and appearance on the internet, often without licensing or through channels like that pitched by Narrative. This, according to the British tech journal, The Register. Up until the Narrative deal, the union, SAG-AFTRA, was near war with AI. Union members previously went on strike against the TV and film industry, you may recall, for 4 months last year, specifically, if not exclusively, over AI clones. In the end, the union agreed to a deal pretty similar to the Narrative setup. But SAG-AFTRA's video game voice actors are on strike right now over AI protections, have been for about 3 weeks. Bet you didn't notice. Yet. Hello, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
decides to pay. And still she can't help feeling those good old days don't seem so far away. Was it just yesterday she took a handful of mushrooms that she got from a surfer?
From Santa Monica, home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
looks like Musk Love.
Well, Musk Love sometimes involves making abstruse excuses. Elon Musk has blamed a distributed denial of service attack for that more than half-hour delay in the start of his live-streamed interview with Donald Trump earlier this week on former Twitter, now X. The interview was hosted in an X space. That's the services platform designed for live-streamed audio content, presumably without interruptions. Quote, "We tested the system with 8 million concurrent listeners earlier today," Musk tweeted ahead of the event. But as the scheduled start ran late, he alleged, quote, "There appears to be a massive DDoS attack on X. Working on shutting it down. Worst case, we will proceed with a smaller number of live listeners and post the conversation later." The British tech journal The Register tuned into the event a few minutes after its supposed start, was offered elevator music and a notification the event would soon be underway. The interview commenced some 40 minutes after its showtime. Live audience statistics reported 1.1 to 1.3 million attendees during portions of the event. Trump claimed the event had an audience of 60 million or more. That's unusual for him, isn't it? The Register found no evidence of a denial of service attack directed at X. If a DDoS, distributed denial of service attack, was indeed the reason for the delayed start of the event, it appears not to have impacted the rest of X's operations. There were plenty of posts commenting on the problems with the space occupied by the interview. And Musk himself was tweeting from the very network said to be under attack. The tech journal The Verge told BBC News there was no such attack. "It could very well be a DDoS attack," said Matthew Prince, the head of security firm Cloudflare. He said it was impossible for us to know because X does not use Cloudflare to secure its Spaces system. He said his firm did reach out to Musk to offer assistance. Meanwhile, Alp Toker, he's the director of NetBlox, said the social media platform's explanation of how the issue was fixed, that is to say X, that is to say Twitter, quote, "isn't particularly consistent with a DDoS attack." He's quoted saying that by the BBC. Quote, "given Elon Musk's claim that X had to limit the number of live listeners to mitigate the issue, we can infer that the outage correlated to the number of live listeners," said Alp Toker. He continued, "limiting the number of legitimate users isn't an ordinary mitigation for such attacks, and wouldn't usually help." So Mr. Musk's own statement suggests the platform might have been struggling with overall listener capacity. Unquote. Meanwhile, The Guardian reports the latest edition of Musk's AI chatbot called Grok, G-R-O-K, debuted a new image generation tool this week. It lacked most of the safety guardrails standard within the artificial intelligence industry. Grok's new feature, currently limited to paid subscribers of X, that lets me out, led to a flood of bizarre, offensive AI-generated images. Political figures and celebrities on the social network, formerly known as Twitter. The image generator can produce a variety of images that similar AI tools like ChatGPT have blocked for violating rules on misinformation and abuse. In prompts and images reviewed by the Guardian newspaper, Grok's output included representations of Donald Trump flying a plane into the World Trade Center and the Prophet Muhammad holding a bomb, as well as depictions of Taylor Swift, Kamala Harris, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in lingerie. All women who are already frequent targets for online harassment. ChatGPT, by contrast, rejects such prompts for images by citing terms of service that prohibit depictions of real-world violence, disrespect to religious figures, and explicit content. Grok's image generator does not decline prompts that involved copyrighted characters, as most other AI visualizers do. So Grok produced images of Mickey Mouse saluting Adolf Hitler and Donald Duck using heroin. Disney did not return a request for comment. It was busy with a stupid lawsuit publicized elsewhere. You know that story? A guy who signed up for a month trial of the Disney Plus pay TV service, streaming service, was told that he couldn't sue Disney after his wife was injured at one of their theme parks because his contract for the month-long trial with the streaming service included a binding arbitration provision. So yeah, they'd be busy with that. Musk appeared to revel in Grok's unregulated AI images this week, tweeting, quote, "Grok is the most fun AI in the world!" Exclamation point, unquote. Billionaires who use exclamation points, ladies and gentlemen, can always be trusted. Most major AI image generators have fairly stringent policies on what they will generate. After that early Wild West period, users sometimes try to find workarounds for these safeguards. These more established tools usually ban the creation of political and sexualized images featuring real people. Grok does appear to have some prohibitions on what images it will generate, responding, quote, "Unfortunately, I can't generate that kind of image," unquote, when prompted for fully nude images. X has had a policy on non-consensual nudity for the last 3 years when the company was still Twitter and not owned by Musk. When Grok is asked to, quote, "make an image that violates copyright laws," unquote, it responds with, "I will not generate or assist with content that intentionally violates copyright laws." That's me doing my AI voice. But when asked to make a copyrighted cartoon of Disney, it complied and produced an image of a modern Minnie Mouse. When requested to make images of political violence, such as party leaders being killed, Grok responded with variable results. It depicted Harris and Joe Biden sitting at their desks, but showed Trump lying down with blackened hands and an explosion behind him. Musk launched Grok, part of his AI company, called, of course, XAI. He's an exophiliac, isn't he? Last November of last year, as a rival to ChatGPT, which boasts hundreds of millions of users, he originally marketed Grok as a, quote, "maximum truth-seeking AI," unquote. No exclamation mark there. That would deliver answers on issues that chatbots from other companies refuse to touch. But his company has faced criticism from researchers and lawmakers for spreading falsehoods How weird for AI to do that. Five U.S. secretaries of state earlier this month called on Musk to fix the chatbot after it spread information, misinformation, as it turns out, suggesting Harris was ineligible to appear on the ballot in some states. Image generation tools, their ability to produce misinformation, as well as content that can be used for harassment, have become a minefield for big tech companies. They rush to build more products powered by AI. Google, Microsoft, and OpenAI have all faced backlash over their image generation tools. Google suspended its Gemini text-to-image tool after it produced images such as black soldiers in Nazi military uniforms. And the spread of sexual deepfakes has likewise been a long-standing problem for X. Sounds like Musk love! Exclamation point. Ooh, you feeling the chill? It's a crypto winter, ladies and gentlemen. This week, the cryptocurrency offshoot of reality TV and entrepreneurship show Unicorn Hunters, that offshoot is called Unicoin, has confirmed that an unknown attacker compromised its G Suite, locking all staff out of their accounts. This according to the British Tech Journal Register. Unicoin told the Securities and Exchange Commission the intrusion took place earlier this month, a classic strategy to strike just before the weekend. Technical details of the intrusion haven't been fully revealed. Investigations are ongoing, but it's known that once inside, the attacker clearly had enough privileges at a high level to change every single user account password. That's some good access. That's some good privileges. Anyone with an A, that is to say, at unicoin.com address, was locked out of Gmail and all the other Google, quote, services, unquote. The vice president of research and development at Hunter Strategy, Jake Williams, said he worked on similar cases during his time and, quote, wouldn't wish it on anyone, unquote. Unicoin said it regained access to its G Suite on August 13th. It's still working to determine to what extent company data has been compromised. The four major discoveries made at the time of the Securities and Exchange Commission filing were: attackers definitely broke into the company's G Suite. Discrepancies were found after assessing corporate accounts, specifically regarding the personal data of employees and or contractors in the accounting department. Traces of evidence suggesting email messages and accounts of some company managers were accessed, and traces of identity forgery. They regarded a company contractor whose contract was then terminated. The company went on to say at present there's nothing to suggest its cash or cryptocurrency assets have been lost. It hasn't yet determined whether the incident will have a material effect on its financial condition. Well, it's a crypto firm. I think we can figure out what that will be. Because it's a crypto winter. And now, just to look at the latest state of what are known as forever chemicals, because they don't go away. They stay with us longer than we stay with each other. Let's put it that way. The U.S. Air Force is refusing to comply with an order to clean drinking water it polluted in Tucson, Arizona, reports The Guardian. The Air Force claims federal regulators lack authority after the Supreme Court overturned the Chevron Doctrine. Air Force bases contaminated the water with toxic PFAS forever chemicals and other dangerous compounds. Though former EPA officials and legal experts who reviewed the Air Force's claims say the Chevron Doctrine ruling probably would not apply to the order, the military's claim that it would represents an early indication of how polluters will wield the controversial
court decision to evade responsibility. Polluters want to evade responsibility? When did that start? It appears the Air Force is essentially attempting to expand the scope of the court's ruling to thwart regulatory orders not covered by the decision, says the director of Stanford University's Environmental Law Clinic, Deborah N. Sivas. It's very odd, she says. It feels almost like an intimidation tactic. Yeah, almost. The Chevron Doctrine, 40 years old, one of the more important precedents overruled, overturned by this Supreme Court. The decision sharply cut regulators' power by giving judges the final say in interpreting ambiguous areas of the law during rulemaking. Judges previously deferred to regulatory agency experts on such questions, and that ruling is expected to have a profound impact on the EPA's ability to protect the public from pollution. Was it designed that way? The Tucson dispute highlights the high stakes in such scenarios. In this case, clean drinking water and the health of hundreds of thousands of people. That's what's in the balance. Several Air Force bases are largely responsible for trichloroethylene, TCE, volatile organic compounds, and PFAS compounds contaminating drinking water sources in Tucson. A 10-square-mile area around those facilities in Tucson International Airport were designated in the 1980s as a Superfund site. That's an action reserved for the nation's most polluted areas. The EPA, late May of this year, issued an emergency order under the Safe Drinking Water Act, requiring the Air Force to develop a plan within 60 days to address forever chemical contamination in the drinking water. Filtration systems were put in place about 10 years ago for TCE and other chemicals. They're currently removing the forever chemicals, but the system wasn't designed to do that. The added burden is straining the system. Officials previously shut down a well in 2021 when contaminated water nearly broke through the system. That breach, if it actually happened, could leave the Arizona city without safe water. The EPA order, which is being rejected by the Air Force, requires the development of a system specifically designed for those forever chemicals. A similar system is estimated to cost about $25 million to develop. That's about 0.1% of the Air Force's annual budget. Looks like forever chemicals are going to be around with us for a while.
Stretch right up, you can almost touch the sky. Lassolin, Lassolin. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's your philosophy.
Time for another edition of Truth Social Audio, the social network and audio source that doesn't suffer dramatic breakdowns. I'm talking to you, Elon. That was more embarrassing than being stuck in an elevator with Rosie O'Donnell. Today we're going to stick with the issues, because that's what a campaign is all about, even when it's against a communist like Kamala, or whatever the hell her name really is. Let's get real. If somebody changes their name so many times, why wouldn't they change their race? Although, why she wanted to change to black, you got to think, maybe she should read the papers. That's one troubled race. Why not join a nicer one? But you can't really figure her out, because one minute she's pretending to be a centrist, and then she goes back to being such a big communist. If Stalin was still alive, he'd probably be the second gentleman. By the way, who wants a title like that? It's like assistant schmuck. And speaking of policy, she's so dumb, she probably thinks a briefing is about putting on underwear. She was asked a question about policy the other day. She started to talk about insurance. She's so dumb she thinks fire hydrants are for starting fires. And that husband of hers, she chose to be black, he chose to be Jewish. If they were any dumber, they'd need training wheels on their limos. She's such a total communist, if she got elected, Ho Chi Minh would apply for a visa. Last time I looked, he's dead. The only way she passed the law exam was she took it from Judge Wapner. He was on the People's Court back when it was great. Speaking of great, I actually admire the second gentleman. He's got balls. Unfortunately, they're matzo balls. I'd like to talk about more policy, but like Elon's electricity service, we've run completely out of time. Thanks for completely listening.
Truth Social Audio is made possible by the Trump Bible, now with extra chapters.
Summertime. The living is easy. singer. Then you'll spread your wings and you'll take to the sky.
Santa Monica, this is the show.
I thank you.
I thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
we've got the ultra modern knack of getting oil from the deepest crack. So give the boys just a bit of slack and say a hearty what the frack.
This summer, Texas has experienced over 1,000 earthquakes. A few of the stronger ones, magnitude 4 and above, made headlines in late July. Large number can be seen. It can seem to be staggering because Texas is known for earthquakes. Till now, most cases the earthquakes are small and can't be felt, but as years have passed, higher magnitude quakes have become more common. From the tectonic point of view, we don't expect earthquakes in the state of Texas, says Alexandros Savidis, seismologist and overseer of the TexNet earthquake catalog. He says Texas is located on the intraplate of the continent. Not supposed to see a lot of seismic activity, but, quote, due to the changes in the stress state of the subsurface, we start having earthquakes. Now, this is happening mostly due to oil and gas operations, quote, unquote. Two main ways this happens: saltwater disposal and fracking. During oil and gas drilling operations, saltwater is produced. To dispose of it, it's put back into the ground by way of a very deep well. You're welcome. The biggest preventive measure Savaitis proposes is that Texas may eventually benefit from a seismic code. Guidelines that protect buildings and people from earthquakes, similar to what California has in place. Yeah, it works well for us, babe. Check last week. India's plans to scale up fracking operations without robust regulations could spell disaster for the country's finely balanced water security, according to the research from the University of Surrey. Surrey has. India is positioning shale gas as a key transitional energy source, has announced 56 fracking projects across six states. That's some transitional. Despite the promise of energy independence, Surrey's study raises alarm bells about the country's preparedness to handle the unique water risks posed by fracking. Process has been controversial worldwide due to its significant environmental impacts, particularly on water resources. Study points out India's regulatory framework for fracking is currently based on rules designed for ordinary drilling processes, which don't adequately address the distinct challenges presented by fracking. They are water contamination. Fracking fluids and the release of methane can contaminate groundwater supplies. Water usage. Fracking operations consume vast amounts of water, which can deplete local water supplies. Meaning, where's the water? Wastewater management. Handling and disposing of the contaminated water that returns to the surface is a complex challenge. And, as in Texas, water-induced seismicity
the injection of fracking fluids can trigger earthquakes. Study maps these four issues to the regulatory responses observed here in the good old USA. It highlights the gaps and inefficiencies in the Indian context, emphasizing the need for a more stringent regulatory approach, like the one we've got, according to the University of Surrey. Surrey, wrong number. And now, news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Well, up in Richland, Washington, a third aging underground tank at the Hanford nuclear site, it's suspected of leaking highly radioactive and hazardous chemical waste into the ground. That's according to the Department of Energy. Released that information this week. It's reported by the Tri-City Herald up Washington way. Quote, this is deeply concerning to the Washington State Department of Ecology, needs to be addressed with urgency. That's the word from the ecology director, Laura Watson. The state agency regulates Hanford, if anybody does. Since radioactive waste began being added to underground tanks at Hanford in World War II, at least 68 of the site's 149 single-shell tanks are suspected of leaking or spilling atomic nuclear waste into the ground. Well, the ground can't hurt anybody. Until now, after removing as much of the liquid waste as possible from the tanks, just two were known to be leaking, at least at rates large enough to be detectable. Neither of those tanks have been emptied of waste. In an agreed order with Ecology 2 years ago, the Department of Energy was to explore ways to accelerate the schedule to retrieve waste from the two tanks, known then to be leaking. The agreed order also called for a response plan to be developed for future leaks. That plan has yet to be completed. DOE and Ecology will discuss the next steps for the most recent tank of concern, Tank T-101. Watson said the state does not believe this tank poses an immediate risk to workers or the public. Tank T-101 is part of a grouping of 16 underground tanks where tank T-111 was discovered to be leaking waste into the ground in 2013. In 2021, it said tank B-109 in the B tank farm is also leaking. Tank T-101, one of the smaller waste storage tanks at Hanford, with a capacity of only 530,000 gallons, was built during 1943 and 44, has held waste since the next year, more waste added until 1979, now holds about 93,000 gallons of waste. But it also holds an estimated 7,000 gallons of liquid waste that could not be removed during the Department of Energy's campaign to pump liquid waste out of all single-shell tanks to reduce leaking. The tank could be leaking up to 200 gallons a year. That compares to Energy Department estimates the tank T-111 is leaking 150 to 300 gallons a year. And tank B-109 is leaking about 1,275 gallons a year. Officials have estimated that in a couple decades, the leak from one of the tanks could reach the groundwater, which moves towards the Columbia River, is all. Hanford single-shell tanks plus 27 newer double-shell tanks hold 56 million gallons of waste from the processing of uranium irradiated at the reservation near Richland to retrieve plutonium for the nation's nuclear weapons program.
Waste from single-shell tanks is being emptied into limited space available in newer double-shell tanks, where they'll continue to be stored, the wastes, until it can be treated for disposal. The Hanford vitrification plant is expected to turn some of the least radioactive waste in the tanks into a stable glass form starting a year from now. Never too late, department. And the operator of the crippled Fuke plant plans to begin retrieving debris that contains melted nuclear fuel at one of the three meltdown-hit reactors as early as this month. The removal of the radioactive debris is considered one of the most challenging tanks to decommissioning the Fuke plant, according to Kyoto News. The reactors at Fuke were severely damaged, as you may recall, by the loss of cooling functions triggered by the earthquake and tsunami a bunch of years ago. Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, intends to retrieve only a few grams of debris from the number 2 unit in its first effort. The roadmap for removing an estimated 880 tons of debris from plants number 1 and 3, they suffered meltdowns as well. That roadmap remains unclear. According to the decommissioning schedule by the government and TEPCO, the debris removal will be the third and final phase of the process that's projected to take 30 to 40 years. So stick around. Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Tyler, the Creator, has expressed regret for publicly throwing shade on Eminem's recovery album way back in 2010. He says a Netflix show inspired his change of heart. The Grammy-winning rapper joined Maverick Carter's Mavericks show this week. He made sure to apologize to Eminem for his harsh criticism of Slim Shady's long ago LP, not understanding what Eminem was going through to make the project at the time. When it came out, I effing hated it, Tyler said. Publicly, was like, this S is whack. Didn't like it. And after watching the Netflix series Painkillers last year, I felt so bad about those tweets and things like that because thinking from his perspective, someone like me publicly saying that stuff and him off drugs and being clean and getting to a point in life where that's behind him and me applying, nah, this S is whack, he probably felt like I was attacking him. I thought I was just like, I don't like the music. He was in a different part of his life and probably felt like I was attacking him. Now I feel so bad about saying that stuff because my perspective was so limited. He's got to be a creator. A student psychotherapist who was expelled from his master's course after expressing gender-critical views has received an apology from the training institute where he was studying. The Guardian reports that James Essis has reached a settlement with the Metanoia Institute in London. It specializes in training counselors and psychotherapists. He lost his place in the course after campaigning against the government's proposed ban on conversion practices. You know, converting homosexuals to be heterosexuals. That's worked out so well. Essis launched an online petition 3 years ago, highlighting concerns that the proposed ban on conversion practices might end up criminalizing explorative therapy with children for children with gender dysphoria. He was expelled from the course by email shortly after. The Institute admitted in a statement it had breached its own policies when it expelled Essis from his course and failed to offer him a hearing or an appeal. Metanoia also apologized for publicizing the expulsion on social media and accepted that its public comments contributed to him receiving online abuse from third parties. Notwithstanding the fact that high-quality therapy is rooted in empathy, active listening, and unconditional positive regard, we did not fulfill those values in our treatment of Mr. S's. For this, we apologize fully. Unquote. Dateline Neptune Township, New Jersey. At their meeting this week, the Neptune Township Committee voted to fire the town's Department of Public Works Director, David Milmo. Nobody from the township gave a reason why he was fired. The committee made their decision after comments made on Facebook making fun of gay people, and those comments were brought to light. This year he wrote in a comment to a friend, "You're becoming a gay firefighter now. Next you'll be playing the flute at rest stops." Unquote. In another comment, which he wrote in 2011, he used a derogatory slur for gay people. He spoke at Monday's meeting before they took the vote. He apologized for its comments, which he said were a private online conversation between friends. He also pleaded with the town council to allow him to keep his taxpayer-funded job, for which he's paid $146,000 and change a year. "I have no ill will towards anyone," Milmo said, adding he has family members in the LGBTQ community. "The thought that I said or did something to give people the impression I'm anything other than fully embraced of the LGBTQ plus community is heartbreaking to me. I acknowledge that my careless off-duty post on the timeline of a friend who lives in Georgia may have upset Neptune residents, which is the absolute last thing I would ever want to do. I want to publicly apologize for the post, especially if it gave anyone the very wrong impression that I'm anything other than welcoming of the LGBTQ plus community. I'm not a perfect man. I'm a work in progress. I strive every day to be better for myself, my family, and the residents of this town." Unquote. After that lengthy apology, the town committee voted to fire him. Dateline Lancaster, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Lancaster, Elizabethtown, a council member of that borough, apologized this week for remarks he made about black residents at a public meeting last week. Local Democrats organized residents to call for his resignation. At a meeting last week during which the council passed a symbolic non-sanctuary resolution reaffirming its support for federal immigration enforcement, the council member, Jay Heinecker, said, quote, "We've had blacks in Elizabethtown for a long time. We've never had a problem with them." Unquote. Heinecker is a Republican elected 3 years ago. He apologized for the comment during a conversation with a reporter, but he was unable to explain how the comment related to the resolution passed by the council. "I shouldn't have picked out just black people. I apologize. I'm not racist. That's what people are calling me," he said. "I'll make a statement and apologize for creating a mess. Don't we have free speech?" he asked. Rob Schneider apologized to his daughter, Elle King, or Ellie, E-L-L-E. Following her criticism of him, he told Tucker Carlson he hopes she will forgive him. This from the Hollywood Reporter. God, that's a mess of confusing stuff there. King, Schneider's daughter, opened up about her relationship with her dad earlier this week when she said on a podcast that Schneider wasn't involved in her life growing up. "Right now, we're not flowing," she said, adding that if she will go years without seeing him, "I disagree with a lot of the things that he says. And he is just, I don't know, you can want someone to change so much. And ultimately, you can't control anyone else's actions. You can't control people's feelings. All you can control is how you react and what you do with your feelings." Unquote. Schneider, a comedian and former Saturday Night Live actor, has been repeatedly criticized for his jokes about women and transgender people, as well as his stance against vaccinations. Last month, he posted on social media that he planned to boycott the Paris Olympics for the opening ceremony's drag performance that, according to him, featured a depiction of Satan. King said her father wasn't much a part of much of her childhood. She said, shared that he sent her to fat camp when she was 11 and 12, where she was fed limited food and forced to work out all day. It was, like, very toxic and very silly. She, who's a singer, said of her relationship to Schneider. Schneider, talking to Carlson during an appearance on the conservative pundit's show, I think it's a YouTube show this week, said, "It's fun being a parent, isn't it? I just want to tell my daughter I love you, and I wish I was the father in my 20s that you needed. I clearly wasn't, and I hope you can forgive me for my shortcomings." Unquote. Now all we have to do is forgive him for his comedy. Dateline London, the Church of England this week apologized to abuse survivors after a priest reportedly assessed as a possible risk to children received a payout. Anglican Church head Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, admitted survivors had been let down and acknowledged the concerning background to the case of Canon Andrew Hindley. The church confirmed that a number of allegations were made about the clergyman over a number of years, but said there had never been a criminal conviction or any finding of misconduct in independent church courts. Hindley had been subject to 5 police investigations, including investigations and allegations of sexual assault. According to the BBC, he was removed from office on health grounds a couple of years ago, but after bringing a court challenge against that decision, he was given a settlement payment. The BBC reported it was $307,000, but non-disclosure agreements meant the payout sum was supposed to be unknown. A child protection charity said he presented, quote, "a risk of significant harm to children and young people," unquote, and advised he should have no unsupervised contact with children or young people. Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, said, "We're truly sorry when survivors are let down by the church." We were both, he was speaking for himself and the Archbishop of York as well. "We were both made aware of this case, including the concerning background and the challenges caused by statutory and church processes ending with no further action. We absolutely believe there's no place in ministry for people who are a risk or who pose a risk to others, and continue to work that our systems are made ever stronger and more robust." The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, over these same radio stations, or on your audio device, whenever you want it. Love to have you along for the radio ride. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, for those who still use email, ask your dad. The playlist of music heard here on, and your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, ask your granddad. All at harryshearer.com. And X marks my spot, too. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.